whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune.
Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Mano. Happy Memorial Day weekend. And today on Company Break, we have a special treat. Coming into the summer months, tradition for a lot of people has been to visit the Mystic Seaport. And today we have representatives of the Mystic Seaport Museum, and Dan McFadden is here. Dan is the communications director. Welcome, Dan. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So the Mystic Seaport Museum is now a little bit different from when I was growing up, or my son was growing up, and we used to go to see the Charles W. Morgan, and then as time progressed, a few other things were added and so forth. It's a pretty big complex now.
Yeah, it's 19 acres, and don't worry, all your favorite things, including the Charles W. Morgan, are still there.
The jewel.
The jewel, our flagship. The village or shipyards are storing the Mayflower II right now. You can get on the water on our steamboat. All the things you've been able to do before, you can still do. But we do have a new initiative, which is to increase our indoor exhibitions, our sort of formal museum exhibitions, if you will. We just finished a couple years ago a $15 million expansion of an area we're calling the Gallery Quad, which is all of our indoor exhibition spaces that we improved and upgraded. And then we also built a 14,000 square foot exhibition building with a 5,000 square foot gallery hall for bringing in visiting exhibitions and also producing ones in-house like we're doing right now, but big, high-caliber exhibitions you could see are Boston, New York. We're doing that in Mystic now.
Excellent. Well, we're going to find out a lot about that, but a little bit about our other guest. Matthew Bird is here. Welcome, Matthew. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Matthew is here today as the guest curator for a special project going on at the museum. Welcome, Matthew. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And you'll also do work at Rhode Island School of Design, correct?
Yes, I'm an adjunct professor. I teach industrial design and industrial design history there.
In beautiful downtown Providence, all right? So Matthew is in Providence, and Dan is in... Dan, do you live in Mystic?
I live right next door in Stonington.
Stonington,
just down
okay.
the road, so I've got a five-minute commute.
Five-minute commute, what a deal. I wish I had a five-minute commute.
I love it. I do love it.
Have you lived in Connecticut long?
Since about 2003.
Okay.
I used to work in television news and moved all around the country, and then did a bit of a change to do communications work around a maritime museum, which boats are my passion, so a little bit of business and pleasure in the job I have right now, which I really like. And of course, Mystic's the center for maritime history.
Right,
so
absolutely.
It's a great situation we have now. I'm very happy.
Well, good. And Matthew, what about you? Are you a Rhode Island guy or somewhere else?
I am. I live right down the street from RISD. I live on the east side. I've been there. I've been in my house for an appalling 25 years.
Wow. All right. And you're only 30 years old.
That's
so
right.
You've got an early start. So before that, how did you end up at RISD?
I was a student at RISD. I studied industrial design there,
okay.
And then started my own business after, designing and manufacturing giftware, and had one of those sort of collage careers where I've done a number of things,
okay.
and fell into teaching design history, which I've been doing for about 12 years now at RISD.
And now we're going to get into the curator part, and let's explain to the audience, curator of an exhibit, or, you know, the guest curator, what do you feel your job description would be if you were explaining to someone like me that has no clue?
A curator at a museum has an education that relates to the collection that they're working with. So most curators know the collection, the division of the museum's collection that they're responsible for, and then can interpret that for the public through exhibitions and lectures and other ways. I work as an outsider and tend to go into art museums that have excellent collections and excellent curators, but not as much of an ability to work outside their collection as they want. So I'll come in and do design-related shows at art museums. That's something I've been working on.
All right. So a guest curator, but let's put it, you know, if the Museum of Modern Art had a particular artist that came in, and someone who was an expert in that field, they might bring them in for something like that. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah. All right. Most museums have, the RISD Museum, for example, has decorative arts department and excellent decorative arts curators. And there's generally an Asian art curator, and there might be a curator of sculpture or a curator of contemporary art. Design is underrepresented in most museums. There are very few museums that actually have design collections, and those that do don't generally know what to do with them. Okay. And so because I teach design history and I can come in as an outsider and sort of import that information. So some of the shows I've done have been completely external. All the for example, a poster collector might be lending his collection to a museum. So I might come in as the person who can help comb through his collection and make it fit the museum's exhibition space. In the case of the Mystic Seaport Museum, they have an extraordinary collection that really is rarely on view. And this is a really exciting opportunity to look through that and find the objects that relate to the show we're putting together. So it's a mixture of mostly things from the collection and then some imports from outside to sort of broaden the story of the show.
Okay, and this exhibition, Dan, I think you mentioned, is going to be running most of the summer, right?
Yeah, it's called Streamlined From Hull to Home, and it opens June 15th, runs through August 25th. So this is our big summer exhibition. And it's designed to be a show really for the layperson. I mean, I think design historians and enthusiasts will really like it, but we think anybody who, you know, likes design in any way will see some familiar things, and we're making a connection from the maritime world to iconic streamlined design, and that's a connection which is a story that hasn't really been told, and that's where our collection is powerful. We've got the boats and the engines and the documentation and the plans to show that, and Matthew's the person here putting it together, interpreting it for the public, and so we're really excited about it.
Now, Matthew, do you have to do some digging in old warehouses and things like that to come up with this stuff, or is pretty much the stuff already, you just got to organize it?
This exhibition has been a special treat for me because when I walked into the storage area, the boat hall at the Mystic Seaport Museum, I was astounded. It's like a candy store for anyone who likes boats. And in that room were, I don't know how many boats, but hundreds of boats and outboard motors.
Really?
And inboard motors and racing skull rowboats, steamboats.
There's every more than 400 boats in this
400
hall.
Boats in one building.
In one building.
Wow.
And then the collection of photography is over 1 million photographs. There are videos. There's so much in the collection there. And the show started with a very famous object called the Sears Water Witch outboard motor that came out in 1937. And it is one of the objects that other museums are desperate to own because it has become an iconic statement of streamlined design, this moment where things that didn't go all that fast were shaped to look like they were going fast. And so this motor is a jumping off point because theoretically it goes fast. You put it on your boat and you go. But the shape of the motor is so exciting and so much more fast implying than it ever could actually achieve, you know, as a functional object. And so as a result, there's a handful of objects from the 1930s and 40s that museums want to own to encapsulate that whole spirit of design. It's called the Streamline Era, and there's a handful of things that everybody would like to have. This motor is one of them. So that the Mystic Seaport Museum had it for other reasons. They had it because it's part of their collection of maritime outboard motors. And then when we started looking at what else in the collection could support this investigation, it got really exciting because in design history, the story is that when Reginald Mitchell managed to fly an airplane that went 400 miles an hour, it was the fastest humans had ever gone. And people looked at his airplane and assumed that it was the shapes the airplane was made out of that allowed that to happen, and then started smearing those shapes on everything. Toasters, outboard motors, butter dishes, anything had to be rounded and pod-shaped. In fact, airplanes were flying boats. The earliest airplanes were engineered to take off and land on water because we hadn't figured out landing gear yet. All of the shape engineering that went into making airplanes work came out of boats, and it's a much older story than most design historians think about or consider. So for me to see the iconic Water Witch engine that screams out streamlined design and American streamlined modernism, and then to turn around and see a boat from 1904 that has all of the same form language and all of the same thinking about shape as it relates to speed, was sort of a mind-bending experience because it's a completely different narrative than most people entertain. And I think the Mystic Seaport Museum is uniquely positioned to be able to help extend that story.
Now you've got me looking forward to June 15th.
Good.
I can't wait to get there.
Good.
It does sound very exciting and very interesting. As a boy growing up on a lake, we always had, and this was back in the early 1960s, we had what we considered fast boats and fast motors. You know, we had an Evinrude 35 horsepower, which was the king of the lake. Well, now that's nothing, you know. So it's interesting to see how that has changed over the years. And when you start talking about motors from the 1930s, I can just picture, you know, well, maybe I'm using the wrong term, but I'm almost thinking Art Deco, you know, that kind of environment of showing things that are sharp and fast. Am I using the right term, or am I in the...
Yes, but you said something else that's more interesting to me, which is you made the assumption that the size of the motor is the thing that determines speed, right?
Well...
And in fact, that's part of the story of this show, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
There's two pathways toward speed. Gar Wood, who is a famous racer, put airplane engines in his boats. And so the Miss America 10 had four airplane engines barely contained in a very lightweight boat, and it went really fast, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But the other pathway is to really look at the engineering of the hull. So there's an actual 11-foot boat in this show that has a radical hull shape, and with a very small outboard motor, it managed to break four world speed records, and all of speed racing rules had to change pretty much to keep it out, because there was so much invested in that equation of bigger motors must be the way to attain speed. In fact, it's the engineering and the shapes and what's happening underneath the boat that you can't see, mm-hmm, that controls the speed of that boat.
Okay. Wow, this is very interesting. And Dan, I just want to make sure that people know about the Mystic Seaport itself, as well as the museum, and there's a great website they can go to if they want to get information. Is that correct?
Absolutely. MysticSeaport.org.
That's tough to remember.
Yeah, it's tough. I try to make it hard.
MysticSeaport.org, and they can get information about when this exhibition is on and others coming down the road, which we'll talk about in the second segment. I know you've got lots of exciting things coming. But is there one building that is going to house this exhibition, or is it how do
sure,
people
it's
find
the
it?
Thompson Exhibition Building, which is a new building we completed just in fall of 2016. It's a modern building. It's a real departure from what we've done before. I got a lot of compliments on it. And it has a big, huge exhibition hall, which Matthew's able to fill with all of our great stuff and some of his objects as well. Okay. It's really the focal point for us. It's a capacity we didn't have before we built the building.
So it's a comfortable place to go, and you have plenty of parking, and people can get there. It's right off of Interstate 95, right?
That's correct. Exit 90, free parking, walk across the street. We've got several entrances. You can get lunch, dinner, go for a boat ride. I mean, I can sit here all day and tell you everything we can do, but it's a great summer destination, and we're just down the road.
We should do some of that in the second segment, but I just want to talk a little bit more about the exhibition when we come back. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more of Matthew Bird's information about the exhibition, and Dan is here to talk about the seaport itself. We'll do that after these brief messages. Welcome back to Company Break. I'm Mike Maynos, sitting with guests from the Mystic Seaport Museum. The communications director, Dan McFadden, is here, and the guest curator for a very special program that we've been talking about, Matthew Bird. And during the commercial break, we were talking a little bit about the size and breadth of what's going on there, and the fact, Dan, that you've been able to bring things in and make them seen that haven't been seen for quite a while, right?
That's right. So our new building gives us exhibition space that we haven't had, just in size and quality. And part of the reason we built the building was to be able to go across the street to our collections vault, where we have boats, photographs, objects of all sorts, and figure out ways to display them and tell their stories across the street, a new exhibition hall. We've had a lot of smaller galleries. We've been doing exhibitions since the beginning of the museum in 1929, but we're able to do it with a scale that we haven't been able to before. And like any museum, you can't have everything you have on display, but we're trying to get as much as we can out across the street when you have the right opportunity to do so. And having the new building allows us to do that and allows us to bring someone like Matthew in to help us do that.
Now, the creature comforts are important, too. I remember when my son is now 39 years old, and I can remember taking him to Mystic Seaport as a kid, and it was usually a hot day, and there was no way to get out of the sun. But at least in the museum, that's now all air conditioned, right? All creature comforts.
Yes. So we have all our indoor exhibition spaces are air conditioned. So if it is too hot, and it's always sunny and nice at Mystic Seaport all summer long. In fact, all year long, it's always sunny.
Always sunny.
And nice. Yeah, you can take a break from the heat, go inside, and that's part of what we're trying to do is by increasing our indoor exhibition spaces and shows, we're good in the winter, we're good in the fall, we're good in the summer. So it gives people, in addition to wandering around outside, which is what they typically expect from us, there's an indoor experience as well that we can provide.
Right, and one admission fee to get into the seaport area.
Yeah, there's a next day validation if you want to come back the next day. So it's one price and enjoy everything on the grounds.
So if let me get that straight. So if you want to do 2 days, it's another.
Yep, we validate for another day.
Wow, that's cool. So take advantage of that. Find a place and a motel or a hotel something, and stay in the area. That'll make a great vacation. It's a lot less expensive than that place in Orlando.
A little bit. It's easier to get to as well.
Easier to get to. Matthew, one of the statistics that you mentioned earlier in the program was the number of photographs. And I'm just envisioning, you said more than 1,000.
No, the Rosenfeld collection at the Mystic Seaport Museum is over 1 million photographs.
I get that. I just wanted you to say it again.
And there's another collection of videos. They have over 400 boats. So there was a lot to work with in this show. And Carol Mowry, who is the curator for the Rosenfeld collection, has been such a pleasure to work with because I keep throwing her these challenges like, can you find a picture of a speedboat where we see the underside of the hull? And 2 weeks later, she'll reemerge with 8 or 9 options out of the million, and I'll choose the one that's right.
No, I can't imagine that. Not, that stuff is not digitized yet.
Or is it? Much of it is.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. So
the photographs, the exhibition has a really fascinating cross-section of types of objects. There are 11 boats, actual boats. So there's a 30-foot boat from 1904 in the exhibition. I don't know of any other museum that is able to do that in this country. And so that tells the Mystic Seaport Museum story really beautifully. But then also the photographs we're reproducing at a larger scale. So because they have the original negatives and they've been digitized at a high resolution, the scale of the images is really very exciting. And then there are also some actual objects. They have an engineered elevation drawing of Buckminster Fuller's Dymaxion car, which is a very famous exercise in automobile design from 1933, drawn by Starling Burgess, who is an airplane designer, boat designer, a poet, so many different things, it's hard to categorize him. He worked on that project with Buckminster Fuller and then went on to work on it on his own, and they have the actual drawings, which will be in the show.
Wow.
So, and then I've brought in some design history components that relate. There are toasters, butter dishes, kitchen mixers, vacuum cleaners, coffee makers that all speak to the streamlined style and relate that design movement back to its roots in boat and airplane design. And from the museum's collection, we have over 30 outboard motors. And the toasters and the motors have a really lovely story because it's a chronology. So the outboard motors go all the way from 1904 up through 1991. And the toasters also go from 1905 or 6 up through 1994. And so to watch as they turn from machines that just make toast or make a boat go into designed objects that are a statement of style into a more competitive landscape of just trying to make them inexpensive or easy to manufacture. So you can see the whole progress of American manufacturing and design and how we figured out how to do all of that in just those two products. There's more. There's half hull models. There's entire boat models. I'm trying to think of all. There's so many objects. It's a really exciting combination of two-dimensional and three-dimensional objects to tell the story.
Now, does this take place? You've mentioned a couple times 1904, 1903, whatever, up till the 60s or whatever. Is that what this is really focused on, or does this go back when? Because I think most people think of Mystic Seaport as whaling history, you know, back to the 1700s and so forth. So,
well, yeah, that's primarily because of the Charles W. Morgan,
which is next
to the Constitution, is the oldest ship that still float in America.
Right.
And she came to the museum in 1941. And we have built the museum and our fleet in many ways around the Morgan. But the Morgan and whaling is just one aspect of the American maritime story, and we work really hard. And if you come and visit, you'll see there is a lot more than just whaling history that we do every day. So, and it also goes on time as well. So, you know, this show is a 20th century show. The Morgan's 1841. So we do different, you know, time periods all at the same time. And it's important for us to become more and more relevant to today's audience. And so, yeah, whaling's one story, but streamlined is another story that we need to tell.
There is no whaling in this exhibition.
Okay, that's okay. Yeah. That's
the
fine.
The basic premise, which I suppose we ought to mention, is that the streamlined style is uniquely American design style. It's sort of the only design style we invented. It happened just after the Art Deco style, which was French. So it was an important part of how Americans sort of grew up and realized that they could have a voice in that wasn't just manufacturing equipment, but was actually designing objects.
Right.
And streamlining means many things in this world. Today we talk about it as a way to make your business practice more efficient or less time on a website, or you're streamlining an experience. But it was an engineering science first, and it was engineered. Streamlining as an engineering effort was arrived at to make objects go faster, first in water, then in air, then on the road, so cars and boats, trains, famous streamlined trains and buses. But at a certain point, it became the name of the streamlined style, which referenced those objects visually. So this show is really explaining the streamlined style from the 1930s, and the older objects in the show are helping to explain where that style came from. So it's looking at how a style developed out of something that had begun as engineering, and then how it sort of, it didn't die, it got incorporated into just the way we make things. So the boat hulls in the exhibition from the 1940s, from World War II and beyond, are still streamlined and designed to go fast, but that stops being anything visible. Okay. It's just the way we think of as a boat hull is supposed to be made.
Sure, sure. Now, is this all power? The whole, pretty much the exhibition is power versus sail?
I would say it's largely power because there's so many, there are 30 outboard motors, and the story of the development of speedboats in the 1920s is a really important part of how engineering matured. But there's 1840s patents for train done by Samuel Calthrop, who also helped invent what we think of as the rowing skull, and there's a rowing skull in the boat, in the show. So there's a really wide range of things. Yes, it's mostly speedboats with motors, but there's also aluminum that was developed in the 1930s, which was an important part of developing the streamlined style, also helped make motorboats possible. And especially during World War II, boat hulls started to be made of aluminum. But then after the war, there were a lot of investigations of how aluminum could transform naval architecture in spars for masts, in hull construction. So there's a little bit of sailboat in the show as well.
Wow, a lot of facets to this, and very interesting to say the least. And I can't wait to see it. I know I've said that before, but it's one of those things where you take some of these things for granted, and you're not sure if you're, you know, a layperson like myself, whether it was the car that came first, or the horse that came first, or the boat that came first, or the plane that came first in designing these styles. But they're all mixed, pretty much, is what you're saying.
I think most people assume that the trains came first. I think most Americans are aware of the streamliners, the streamlined trains that happened in the 1930s, and will be surprised to see how many other things came before that. Mm-hmm. And then what I find a satisfying challenge in putting together an exhibition is thinking of every possible visitor. And I don't want this to be an exhibition for people who already know about streamlining, and I don't want it to be a show for people who don't know anything about it. I want it to be a show for the entire spectrum. Mm-hmm. So if you already know about streamlining, there's going to be a lot here you didn't know, and if you don't know anything about it, it will
be more.
And it's been so much fun to start setting up the objects and have everybody who works at the museum come in and say, oh, I had that vacuum cleaner. Or, wait a minute, that coffee maker? Right. You know, everybody has an awareness of the objects in the show. Yeah. And so I think being able to sort of expand the things we already know, or even better, attach them, is really exciting. So there's evidence of the streamlined cars, the Airflow, the Chrysler Airflow, which is a famous one, and the streamlined trains, and Raymond Loewy's streamlined buses. They're all there as well.
And it's interesting, you know, I never would have thought from someone talking about this, if you wanted to show this progression, that a toaster would come into effect. You know, that just wouldn't come to my mind. Yet I know exactly what you're talking about when you say, you know, I'm looking back and seeing my grandmother's toaster and, you know, and my aunt's toaster and how that changed over the years, and what was on the counter in my friend's house. And it is interesting that all those things, you know, play into it and what was American design. I just want to touch a little bit about the museum itself and the seaport itself and make sure, Dan, that people know they can go to the website, which we mentioned in the first segment, but let's do it once again. It's mysticseaport.org.
That's correct.
All right, simple as that. And there's an opportunity to go there and find out about other things. But you have other events coming up. You've planned other exhibitions. This one's running till August 25th. But you have some others coming down the road, too.
Right. Well, the one we're most excited about is a collection of J.M.W. Turner watercolors from the Tate Museum in Britain. It's 97 pieces, almost all watercolors, a few oils built in and included there as well. It's a show that's presently in Santiago, Chile. It was in Rome, in Buenos Aires before, and it's coming to Mystic. It opens October 5th. This is a show that could be in New York, could be in Boston, could be in Los Angeles.
I was just going to say, you got Buenos Aires and Rome, and then in the same breath, Mystic.
That's right. Okay. That's what we're trying to do. We're very excited about the show. And when actually we were building our building and working with the architect on it, the Board of Trustees got in the habit of saying, this building has to be good enough to house a Turner. And lo and behold, our new Senior Vice President for Curatorial Affairs came on board. And a man named Nicholas Bell, who's worked very closely with Matthew in putting the Streamline show together, picked up the phone when he got here to call Tate and said, could we do something together, and what about Turner? And they said yes. So we're putting that together. It's going to be here from October 5th into February of 2020. It is a big step forward for Mystic Seaport, and I've seen the list of works. I'm not a Turner expert, but they are absolutely fabulous. They really, really, it's really going to be a remarkable show. And it's watercolors from across his whole life. Turner's best known for his oils, but he started watercoloring at age 10 and did it till the very end.
But the subject matter is certainly not just boats or water.
Actually, it's exactly the opposite.
That's right,
it's a survey of Turner's entire career. Mm-hmm. And looking at the watercolors, you're able to sort of get in behind in the artist's mind. What is he doing? And most of these works actually were not intended to be on display. Many of them weren't. They're little sort of, he called them color beginnings, basically sketches that he would put together. They're all beautiful, and you could see he was, as Nicholas says, he was creating a visual memory by working on these. So you'd have to go to London to see most of these, and they're probably the largest collection of Turner watercolors ever to come to the United States, and they really tell you the story of this remarkable artist. There is one section, which Tate put together just for us, called Turner and the Sea, which has a couple famous oils and really just shows that, since he is known as being something of a maritime artist, but this is not a maritime show, we do have a section that kind of puts together some key pieces.
Yeah.
So you can look at the watercolors, look at his whole career, and then see Turner and the Sea at the very end of it. It's going to be a great show. We're really looking forward to it.
All right. So that'll obviously be on the website also. Make sure you check it out and take advantage of that. We've got just a couple minutes more, and I want to go back to Matthew and talk about some of the other aspects of putting this together. Lots of help, or is this just you with your sleeves rolled up?
No, it takes a village. One of the most rewarding parts of working with the Mystic Seaport is they have a really extraordinary staff. Everyone there is such a pleasure to work with. So we've got, I've been working with the different curators of the different departments, boat, photograph. On the sort of the research end, there's designers, 3D designer, 2D designer, exhibition designer. So there's really great people. And then I also love that every time I'm there, I wander into a new part of the museum and find the boatyard and find the rope making building and fall into conversations with people. So it's really been fun for me. I grew up with boats, but so I have a sort of baseline familiarity, but taking a deep dive into this exhibition and having to really understand how does an outboard motor work, you know, that's not really part of what I already knew. And there have been people at every step to help me sort of get up to speed. Mm-hmm. So then, and frankly, that's for me the exciting part of being the outsider. I have permission to ask as many questions as I want, right? And nobody's rolling their eyes, or if they are, they're being polite about it. So I've just been fearless about asking people, not just for help, but for information that I don't think... You know, the internet's a nice place to find some stuff, but sure. Honestly, when you ask someone who spent their life building boats, about the difference between two shapes of gunwale or some specific technical thing, the answers are sometimes astounding.
Right.
I don't always get the answer I need, but I always get an answer that is a total pleasure to encounter.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in today. I wish we had more time. Mystic Seaport Museum and this special streamlined show, which is running from June 15th to August 25th. Remember, check it out at mysticseaport.org. Dan, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And Matthew, a pleasure to meet you, and look forward to seeing this exhibit myself. Thanks for being here. All right, and the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Company Break.